two things that I know now, and one of them is that my bones are squishy, and the other is that I'm never getting on a plane again. This is We Have Concerns. Hi, Jeff Cannata.
Hi, Anthony Carboni.
Hello, concerned citizens. Jeff, you know I take our no scientist policy on this show very seriously.
Yeah, we are an award-winning science podcast with no scientists.
Well, because I understand, just like you understand, that science is a feeling. Science, yeah. It can't be quantified. It refuses to be explained.
And there's one thing we know about science. It's that you can't really write it down.
No. Science comes from somewhere deep inside where we don't know.
No one will ever know.
No one will ever know. And that's science. And yet somehow, every once in a while, a scientist worms their way into the anxiety chamber. And today we are joined by one of them. I actually like this one. I actually like this one just fine. Shannon O'Dell is here. Hello, Shannon.
Yay, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Newly Dr. Shannon O'Dell.
I am Dr. Shannon O'Dell, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, we like you even less now.
Well, the thing is, I consider myself if someone doesn't want a scientist in the room, I'm the best scientist to put in the room.
That's actually
like
the best
cool
way.
Scientist.
Yeah, you're like cool.
I'm like confused scientist.
You're like the cool mom. Like you'll buy us drinks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You're like
the substitute teacher of scientists.
Yeah, I'm the one who I'll put on a video.
Yeah. I love it.
That she actually promised to do that during the podcast today. I was like, we're going to ask you a question about your field of study. She's like, cool. I'm sure there is a video I can refer you to. Somewhere on YouTube.
I have a VCR. I have a cart. I have a big TV and a VCR and a cart in the hall that I'm going to call in here.
She brings it with her everywhere.
But Shannon, you are a neuroscientist.
Mm-hmm.
You are a comic and I met you on your Shadowrun podcast, Fun City.
Yes. The classic multi-hyphenate. Those three things combined.
Mm-hmm.
Comic, scientist, and tabletop role-playing player.
Scientist and orc roller derby player.
Exactly. The thing
is another one of those.
Yeah, there are so many of us. It's really hard when we go out for roles. It's like there's the whole room of us.
It's devaluing the entire job market.
It really is.
Yeah.
Well, we're so excited to have you here because there's been a lot of brain news.
Yeah, sure.
And we're very excited. Once again, we refuse to learn how the brain works, but. We're very happy that you're here to give your opinion on it. I guess science's opinion on it
it. I feel like science refuses to learn how the brain works because I feel like every day we're like learning something new. We're like, maybe.
We thought this and now. But that's the thing is I remember like, I guess it was almost 10 years ago when the neural mapping thing started to come into play. And it was a lot like when we started sequencing DNA and it was like, oh, we thought this about the brain, but we're stupid.
Yeah. It's always just like, if we collect enough data, we'll figure it out. And then it's just like, no, we don't know it yet.
See, that's why we say on this show, science is a feeling.
Yeah,
exactly. It's so funny that the brain is struggling to understand itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's what's happening. It's just all of us are using our brains so hard because the brain is so hard to understand.
Alanis Morissette said that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's in her famous song, Jagged Little Pill.
That's the one. That's the one.
I want to ask you about this story that it has to do with the brain a bit, but I think it has to do with really a lot of the frontier of science right now. There is some interesting work being done in the field of prosthetics. And we got this story that actually comes from the journal Science Robotics. And it's about, we think of artificial limbs and prosthetics and armatures as ways to replace in individuals that might need, a replacement limb or compensating for perhaps an injury.
I was going to say to jump high and destroy my enemies.
Well, there's that too. I think you're getting more to what I'm talking about.
Yeah, now we're in the Shadowrun world.
Now we're talking science, baby.
Yeah.
But if you happen to be a doctor of science, like, oh, I don't know, Dr. Otto Octavius, for example, then maybe you're more interested in prosthetics as a way to add parts to the human body instead of just replace parts we already have or missing parts that
I will remind you that this is a family show at this point, Jeff. Because I think I know where you're going, and I'm going to ask you not to go there.
Do families listen to this podcast? Full families?
Yeah, they all sit together.
There's no family.
No. They all sit together. On a Sunday.
A, not a family podcast.
After church.
B, you've never stopped me from bringing up synthetic butts before. Mom, I'm going to talk about second butts.
Mom puts a roast in the oven and everybody sits down around the old Philco and they put on their favorite podcast, We Have Concerns. Uh-huh. And no, I would never stop you from bringing up prosthetic butts. You called me out.
Second butt. Everybody wants a second butt. Now it's possible with science.
Second butt a third cheek or is it a whole second butt?
That's a great question.
Oh, that's one of those things that science has been wrestling with for a long time.
Yeah.
Because is the butt the crack? Or
yes, exactly. So you would only need a third cheek and you would have two butts. That's the thing. If you add two, if you add two cheeks, you have one, two, three. You have three butts.
Now, this is a lot. This reminds me of city planning and the idea of building
shitty planning.
Building long. How dare you? That is your one. Don't encourage him. You're new and you don't know what it'll do.
I love it.
No, you don't. It's like the difference between Disney World comes in and builds a really long parking lot that goes on forever and you're parked in Goofy 57 and it's a mile and a half from you. And then Universal Studios comes in and they go, no, we're just going to build it. It has multiple floors. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think what you're talking about with the butt on butt is like, are we building wider? Because that initially seems like it's more efficient. But is it more efficient to go out butt on butt?
How about this? Building butt better.
I like it.
We're going somewhere. Now we're going into branding.
Sometimes branding comes
before the product.
Oh, if you're smart, if you're the Disney Corporation, it certainly does.
We're going to make them walk to Goofy 53 and they're going to think it's fun. Because we're calling it Goofy 53.
Anthony, I'm afraid if we follow your analogy to its logical conclusion, you're suggesting a butt inside a butt.
Okay.
If that's the multi-tiered parking version of what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
This is a fractal butt.
Mm-hmm. You're saying not wider, deeper is what you're saying.
Now.
Anyway, we're not talking about butts. We're talking about new limbs, and in this case, a second thumb. There is a group of researchers that have actually created a robotic third. I shouldn't say second thumb on a single hand. Thumb. Yeah, the third thumb.
Big deal.
It's one of your hands gets another thumb. Where is this thumb? Well, it is on the other side from where your current thumb is. It'd be right next to your pinky finger.
That makes sense.
Hanging off that fleshy part of your palm.
That makes sense, because then you add grip to the other side.
It does seem weird that there's no other finger right there, right? There's such a long, unused space of your palm that there's no finger, you know? What's up with that?
Well, it seems like it's much more efficient in terms of, like, instead of putting it next to the other thumb, for sure. Or like in between any of the other fingers, like, because then you have like this mirror grip thing.
You got this huge space right there. And it feels like, I don't know, I'm not an evolutionary biologist, but it sure feels like
not anymore.
After that lawsuit, not after that lawsuit. I still say, as an evolutionary biologist, that we all come from monkeys. That's what I said.
Yeah. We all come from monkeys.
They were monkeys, and then they birthed humans.
Yeah.
That was my theory.
And it happened, it happened real fast.
Doesn't it seem like having another, like, wraparound finger right there would be super useful?
You could play two Game Boys at once.
Two Game Boys.
That's double pocket monsters. You could link cable and trade with yourself. Think about that.
Well, this is what these researchers have determined. They created this robotic thumb, and actually how it works is there's a little pad, I guess kind of like a game pad, that is placed in your shoe. And it communicates wirelessly with the robotic thumb that's strapped to your hand. And you can control the robotics, that you can manipulate the thumb by pressing down on the little pad with your foot.
It's like a piano pedal.
Wow.
No, it's actually more subtle than that. It has subtle changes of pressure in your foot can do really actually fine motor skills with the thumb.
It's okay.
So it's really actually, it's not like an on off switch. It's not like thumb, you know, it's not just a binary press of a button.
Is it in the heel or are you pushing it with like a big toe? Cause now you're talking about
you're using your big toe, the underside of your big toe.
Okay.
All yeah. right. So this, I don't know, like when we think about these sort of prosthetics, we think about this, like, I don't know, this, we want to put a shunt into our brain, and then all of us do unanimously.
Yeah.
And then,
begging for one at this.
Come on.
Shunt my brain. Because the first thing that Shannon said when she walked in here was shunt my brain, please.
That's her catchphrase. Yeah. She goes, she walks in, she goes, well, shut my brain.
It was a big hit in the science lab.
It was great.
Yeah. Their t-shirts. Yeah. Everyone's everything.
Like, yeah. She would walk in and she would walk by people in the cafeteria and they'd be like, shut my brain.
Shut my brain girl.
That's the most important thing. Again, as a scientist, is branding. You need to have an identity.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Smart.
Thank you. But yeah,
Did it get to that point though, Shannon, where you were like Leonard Nimoy when you're like, I'm over the shut my brain thing. I don't want to be Spock anymore.
Yeah. I've come back around.
Yeah. Well, you created that second catchphrase afterwards. What was that?
Don't go in my nose.
It wasn't as relatable.
Very COVID, it was very very yeah. COVID centric.
It really wasn't catching on.
but you know what I'm getting at is, I think we want a brain to electronic interface is what we think about things.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be able to think, or eventually just not even think, just do like I do with anything else I move in my body and move this robotic part. Why foot pedal?
Well, I think it was easy. These things are ridiculously cheap to make, actually. They're all 3D printed, the mechanics and the thumb. So they were really simple. And what they did was...
Get your thumb by 2 p.m.
They asked...
From the movie.
They asked 20 people... I'm getting like every other word you're saying, so I have no idea what you even said.
I said I'd get you a thumb by 2 p.m. from the movie.
Oh, I get you. Okay. No, that's good. I would have responded if I had actually heard any of it.
We're not having any technical issues and everybody shut up.
All right. So they took 20 participants and they asked them to use the thumb, take it home, even take it home over these 5 days. And
I would love to know what they were doing with the thumb. You get the participants, you're like, here, please use this thumb.
Take the thumb. Try it out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Just use the thumb any way you want.
Exactly.
And they're like, can I have one of the second butts as well, please?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay, you take this thumb and you take these wipes.
They asked them to go 2 to 6 hours of wear time per day and just try to do normal things. Pick up, you know, glasses or you know, object plates and dishes and stuff. Do normal things with the extra thumb and come back. And what they found was these people mastered the use of this thing extremely fast. Mm. That they were actually using it really dexterously. They were able to use the thumb even when they were distracted. Like if they were asked to build a wooden block tower, like a Jenga tower, and do math in their head at the same time, or while they were blindfolded, they could still do it with the thumb after only 5 days of practice.
Wow.
No. No.
Yeah. Ow.
They integrated this extra appendage so thoroughly into their, like, their brain just adapted to having more ways to interact with the environment.
See, what's interesting about that to me, and this is not what they tested at all, is that I want to then know, and this shows what kind of scientist I am. I want to know their emotional connection to that thumb. I want to see them take that. I want them to see that thumb then be like put on someone else, or like what's the kind of attachment
the
we feel?
Cheating on me.
Yeah. Like, you know, because it reminds me, do you all know the invisible?
Oh, you're a mean scientist.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the kind of scientist I am.
All right.
I want to then rip it off of them and then watch. And then I want to burn it in front of them and just see if they cry.
I want to put the thumb on someone else and thumb cuck them.
And I want to see. I'm an evil scientist. You're either good or you're bad. But more interested in like the human connection and like human emotion, because, or just like, do you know the invisible hand experiment where
you rub lightly on somebody's hand?
That's where you sit on your hand and make it go to sleep. And then you, no?
Family show, mom's taking the roast out of the oven, but it is kind of like that because let me see if I'm explaining this right.
Yeah.
You rub lightly on somebody's hand.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't see it. They see somebody else's hand that you're doing the same thing to.
They see, well, the rubber hand experiment is you have a rubber hand there. And your hand, you can't see your hand. So you have this hand that's getting, you can't see that hand, the one hand, and it's getting touched or rubbed with a feather. Then you see a rubber hand that's also getting touched at the same time. And then in the experiment, then they stab the rubber hand.
And you feel a stab in your hand?
You get the response of like, like people think they're being stabbed.
You at the very least reflexively, because I've had it done to me before, you at least very reflexively pull your hand away.
Yeah.
Because it's happening in the same way.
Because you're associating.
Yeah. You can't see your hand. Oh. You see the other hand and they're both feeling the same sensation at the same time. So your brain goes, oh, cool. There's my hand.
Yeah.
So you think people are developing like connections to this thing very quickly.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's interesting because this interface doesn't go like through the, it's interesting that it just goes through the foot and you're controlling it with your foot. But so I don't know what that means. But just understanding that the way we like think about our body is very influenced by, you know, what we see, like what's happening spatially.
I can't imagine having the creativity to even think about what to do with this second thumb once it's attached. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, sorry, ladies, but I mean, like, I just, when you attach a second thumb and you're like, do things. And I'm just like, I don't know. I already have a thumb.
Right.
What?
No, it was allowing people to like pick up 3 or 4 wine glasses at a time where they could usually only pick up 2.
Okay.
You know, which is super useful if you want 3 or 4 wine glasses, you know, to be someplace else than where they are at that moment.
Right. Two Game Boys and a link cable, like we were talking about.
Yeah, the entire service industry. Danny Claude from UCL Institute of Cognitive Neuroscience says that, quote, our study shows that people can quickly learn to control an augmentation device and use it for their benefit without overthinking. We saw that while using the third thumb, people changed their natural hand movements. And they also reported that the robotic thumb felt like part of their own body.
There you go.
There's that feeling. Now stab it and see what people feel about it.
Stab it.
Every one of Shannon's experiments ends with, okay, now stab it.
Now stab it. How are people feeling now? How are we feeling?
Well,
does it feel like part of your body? We're going to stab it.
Yeah. It seems like your new catchphrase was right there in front of you, and you didn't embrace it the way you should have.
Don't put it in the nose.
I don't know. I feel like let's stab it was right there.
Yeah.
the fascinating part to me is that it actually changed how people used their hand.
Yeah.
Did they give a bunch of examples?
Well, they were saying that people would actually invert their hand in a way that they wouldn't normally do because the other thumb allowed them to grip things in different ways.
Oh, I'm trying to imagine.
And then they said They also, before and after the training, they scanned the participants' brains using MRIs. Mm. And while the participants were moving their fingers individually, they scanned them. And they found that a subtle but significant change in how the hand that had been augmented with a third thumb was represented in the brain's sensory motor cortex. Wow. So in comparison to the hand that didn't have the extra thumb, it actually changed the way the brain was thinking about and manipulating.
Yeah.
The thumb, the hand with the thumb.
This sounds like phantom limb stuff to me.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what I was thinking, you know, that the sensory motor cortices, they're super like plastic, and it's interesting to think about it in that way, that like, even how many days do you said it was 6 days?
Yeah, just 5 days for them to be trained.
Yeah.
And then they speaking to the plasticity, a week later, they went back and scanned them again, and all the changes in their brains had reverted back.
Oh. And so what did like, the well, thumb think thumb about anymore. That? Did anyone ask the thumb?
They forgot about me already?
Okay.
So this is, you said that's very plastic. This is something that you would expect to see me.
Yeah, maybe, but I wouldn't expect to see it so fast. I don't know. I haven't looked at the changes or how significant they are. That's crazy that you could train so quickly. I would think that would have to take months to do, because it just seems like it's not intuitive to move another thumb, but.
Yeah. I think about things like physical therapy, where people are trying to like rehab a limb or like use a prosthetic limb. And you think about like the length of time that it takes to integrate that.
Sure.
But it seems like we start doing it so quickly.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Or if there's something with the hand specifically, you know, I don't know how that compares to like, if you say like you lose a hand or something, you get, an artificial hand, like how quickly do we have just like a super plastic area in our brain where the hand is, because the hand is so important compared to other areas.
Yeah.
This is also,
that's a great point. Like if you had a whole arm, would it be equally as plastic, or
right.
some other appendage? It might not be the same result, because the hand might just have a special place in our brain.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
It also makes me think about all the things that we hear and learn about neuroplasticity, and how it's like, well, once you're an adult, your brain turns to chewed gum and it's stiff and you can't learn anything anymore and eat shit. What you know is what you know.
Right.
But it sounds like that's not true.
No, not true at all. Our brains are very plastic. You know, I feel like there is a debate in neuroscience this doesn't have to do as much with plasticity, but recently there was this debate of like new neurons in the brain. And, I always thought that it was forever. You always grew a lot of new neurons in the brain when you were young in these special areas. But then there was this thought that maybe like you reach a certain point and you're not really producing. But then there was a big debate and they were like, no, we found new neurons in old people. And it was a back and forth. Hmm. Scientists love to debate. But yeah, the adult brain is still really plastic. It's actually really, that is why the brain is cool and why you shouldn't study the heart or the kidney.
Yeah,
you
fuck should, the heart.
You should study the brain. And that's why I'm here on this podcast. Many people
Thank
are
you.
Studying other organs.
The kidney's stupid.
Thank
the
you.
The kidney can't do mahjong.
Yeah. No, you're right. There's no kidney mahjong. And by the way, do you know how many heart researchers listen to this show?
With their
and
families?
Thank God, finally, somebody has the guts to say it, right? Stop studying the heart.
Okay. We know what heart
it's
do.
It's a useless organ.
Grow we know what up. Heart do.
Grow up.
Study the brain.
Heart go thump thump.
We know already. Blood go through body. We get it. Learn something new, babies.
Yeah, name one thing that the heart does that's essential to life.
One thing.
Name one. I bet you can't.
Yeah.
You can't. But the brain, listen, I can just off the top of my head. Mahjong.
Exactly.
Sudoku.
Right. So there you see, there's two.
What's the name? I'm trying to, damn it. Shogi. That's what it is. It can do mahjong, shogi, and go. And the heart can't do any of those. Name
Useless
one
heart.
Tile-based Useless. Japanese game
that the heart can
that
do.
The heart can do that the brain can't.
Exactly.
I'm waiting.
Yeah. Thank you, Shannon. Thank you for finally saying what we've been thinking for so long.
And that's what this podcast is about, right?
Yeah. No, please come here and do the evangelize for the scientific community. Yeah. Please.
Fuck the heart. Fuck the heart. My question to you, Shannon, is would you augment your body in these ways? Would you add another thumb or an arm, perhaps?
Sure. Yeah. I would like a lot of stuff.
Hell yeah.
keep it. We'll take the full package. Just keep adding
on. Exactly. Five things you would add right now.
Okay. I would add another leg.
Okay.
Because I think
some of us already have a third leg.
Talking about that sad little dog that lives down the hall from me?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
They adopted this sad little dog, and it's only got three legs.
Aww.
But it's living and it's doing its best.
I bet it would like maybe if we could give it a thumb.
Yeah. We could give it one thumb. We could have three legs and a thumb. But that's one dog, less leg.
The dog with three legs and a thumb.
That's one less leg, but one more thumb than any other dog.
Exactly.
So you would do third leg.
Third leg, because I think it would balance me like a tripod. Like you don't want something that balances. You want an easel. You want a tripod.
None of those cardiologists could push you over.
Think of how many. Think of how you could lean
in the hallway.
Just all day.
Exactly.
You could just be leaning constantly.
And I would also, I think I would like a whole nother arm because I'm constantly getting my arm stuck. I'm a very clumsy person. I'm like, when I cut, I'm like about to cut my hands off. Like I just, I'm an injury waiting to happen is basically my whole deal. So I would just like to have extras just in case.
That's fair.
You just want spares. Yes. Is what you want. You want spares.
So I don't feel that bad if I injure something. Yeah.
No, I like that.
I gotcha.
But I do also feel like if they give you spares, like if you're clumsy with two arms, if they give you four arms, is that twice as many cuts?
Yeah, that's true.
Are you hurting yourself twice as much?
That's true.
Yeah.
Or do you become more...
I feel like...
Does it become a more facile thing?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. We all know that I want wings. We all know that I want night vision. We all know that I want a glow-in-the-dark skeleton. We've talked about these things before. But I'll tell you what, man. This reminds me of... Jeff, Shannon's new, but Jeff, you know I only like bad, weird movies that nobody cares about.
Yeah.
It's not a hipster thing. I just have a bad broken brain. And Shannon, maybe we can talk about why I like the bad movies.
Okay.
You know Gattaca?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
There's a part where in Gattaca where they go, it's a world where everybody buys their genetics and they go to see a concert pianist and this pianist is playing this beautiful piece and Uma Thurman leads over to Ethan Hawke attractively. Because it was like late 90s. They were both so hot. Hot movie, this Gattaca. Jude Law was there.
Both are still hot.
Still hot. But I mean, like, we're talking all three at the height of their powers. And she leans over and she goes, "This can only be played with six fingers. This is a piece of music that's written to be played only with six fingers. And that's why it's so beautiful."
Wow.
And I'm thinking about that. And I'm like, I can't think of a single thing I would do with this extra thumb. But like, I don't know, maybe I wear it for a week and I start thinking about things.
Yeah.
Well, I think based on this article that people came up with all kinds of novel ways to make it easier for them to do certain things. I mean, you can think of ways that you hold things and then add an extra support piece at the bottom of your palm. You know,
phones could get so much bigger.
Oh, yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God. Phones have gotten too small. Thank God they can get bigger now.
And think of like when someone does a really good job, you could give them two thumbs up.
Oh.
With one hand.
You could hang loose so easily.
So easy.
You could hang loose way easier.
Yeah.
You could hang loose so easy. I wonder how long it would take to not just, you know... If everybody started adding these things, how long it would take society to catch up and be like...
How long it would take society to just move to a multiples of 11 counting system?
A four-thumb system.
Oh, yeah. Right, because isn't our whole counting system based on fives because we have five fingers?
Yeah. Yeah. The decimal system. Yeah. But now it just seems easier to count to 11.
Hmm. You know? We'd have to change everything.
Did we used to have 12 fingers and that's why calendar?
Maybe.
Have we discovered something? Is this ancient aliens shit?
Well, my thing that I'm so excited about with this is that it isn't a shunt to the brain,
yeah.
Right? This feels like really accomplishable. You know, this is like a product you could buy.
Right.
You could, if this is relatively cheap to mass produce, give me the little Wi-Fi device in my shoe, and now I've got a thumb that's useful. Like, that's kind of awesome.
Yeah, I bet this wouldn't cost very much.
No surgery required, you know?
Yeah.
I bet it couldn't cost much at all, really.
That's what they're saying. It's all 3D printed stuff.
Did they put the plans up? I want to make a thumb.
No, I don't think they did that. These are scientists. They're not giving that shit away. Come on.
Come on.
Well, what I find interesting about this, too, is that it kind of just like you start to think about all the different ways and the different things and tools that we use that actually are changing our brain. You know, that just like the simplest things can change your brain. Or just think about like the ways we can hold phones and interact with phones. Like if we gave ourselves an iPhone, you know, 20 years ago when there was no iPhone, our way of like handling the phone would be so clumsy.
Yeah.
And now we just.
Dude, that's such a great point.
Yeah.
And we talk about that a lot on the show is the ways in which as we get more reliant on technology, we just offload things, you know, like kids used to have to learn multiplication tables and now it's just, well, we have calculators all the time on our person.
Jeff,
so why
Jeff
do we need to do that?
Jeff didn't have a calculator when he was a kid. Jeff is very old.
What?
I said they didn't have calculators when you were a kid, Grandpa.
Wait, are they really still not? They're not learning.
They have to learn multiplication tables. They absolutely do.
I don't think so.
They don't have to memorize them?
I don't know. I'll find out when my kids get into school.
I think.
I'm curious about this new
but
math.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Like we used to have to remember everybody's phone number. We used to have to know the directions to places. We used to have to be able to.
There's things that technology is now offloading from us. And I feel like it's really the same thing that you're talking about. The brain goes, oh, I can use this extra thumb, or, oh, I've got all the world's knowledge in my pocket.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very similar, I think a very analogous process.
What if you had to choose? Extra thumb or all the world's knowledge in your pocket?
I'm going thumb.
I gotta go thumb. I go thumb every time, baby.
But it is funny because, like, yeah, we're so adaptable. We're so, like, we're not gonna pay attention to. We learn pretty quickly what is life or death, and what we need to pay attention to, and what we need to hold on resources for, and what we kind of can offload.
But it's weird what we do. Yeah. Here's a question that I have for you, Shannon.
Okay.
You fucking scientist.
All right.
How come we are adaptable in that way where my sense of direction is not as good as it was, and my brain was cool to give that up? My brain was like, cool, we'll give up the knowledge that we have to remember how to get someplace because now we can look it up. But lizard brain says everything kill me.
Right. Sure.
How come there's stuff that we can't get rid of?
Sure. I mean, because, certain things are going to be, I think it's kind of attention too. So like if you were in a really stressed out situation, like you're like, you know, attention system's going to be more online. Like if you know that knowing how to get to the nearest exit is, you know, life or death, you might be a little bit better at direction.
That's fair.
So like, I think it's, again, this kind of attention thing that like, where are we putting our conscious attention? And if we kind of know by now that we never need to know directions anywhere, because we always just have a map at our fingertips, then we're not going to put any like emotional or like cognitive energy into remembering directions. But if you are, if you're a driver, maybe you will.
So what you're saying, Shannon, is that anything that you want to remember, you have to make a matter of life and death.
Yes.
If you really want to remember it, if it's like, so here's what
that's why I remember the faces of all my enemies.
Yeah.
We have a service that we offer to people.
Now we're talking.
Do you want to never forget your anniversary?
Sure.
We will threaten to murder you. If you don't, we will come to your house at a time of our choosing when you do not know. We will kidnap you.
Okay.
Tie you up in the basement and ask you what the anniversary is.
All right.
You better know it, or we will murder you.
Well, this is,
and we're not messing around.
I love this. I love this idea. But I will say, if we're under too much stress, then we're not gonna remember. So we gotta have the good balance of stress, right? So a little bit of stress is really good for our brain and memory and performance. A lot of stress.
So we kidnap him, but we don't tie him up.
Right.
Like, and maybe we don't blindfold him. I don't know.
Yeah.
What if on the day of their anniversary, you pay us, and at some point during the day, when you don't know when, on the day of your anniversary, we just come over and we shove you. And we go, happy anniversary, motherfucker. Like, as you hit the ground.
Okay.
Will you remember it then?
Are you going to hit your head when you hit the ground?
We push you and then we throw down a pillow.
Okay. Yeah.
What if we set fire to your car?
But not you. You're not in it.
I mean, emotion.
You're not in it.
If you're going to have an emotional attachment, our brain's like, okay, this is something we might want to remember for a while.
See?
Yeah.
We call it something with shove in it, because I like the word shove. A shove to remember. And we write it in a frilly font.
Yeah.
Shannon, I know other than science, your passion is branding.
Yeah, my passion's branding and also, startups also. So this is good for me.
So how do you feel about this?
Yeah. You always remember your first shove is what we call it.
Okay, I'm already seeing the Shark Tank pitch, so.
It's good, right? Uh-huh. It's good.
Do you think we are moving? It sounds like you think that this sort of offloading isn't just natural, but it might be positive for us.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Positive, negative, it makes it seem more like, I'm not putting a moral judgment on it. I just think it's what is happening.
Right. Classic scientist.
Yeah.
Classic scientist. It's not about that. It's you're reporting on what you observe and what the facts lead to. And it's not about whether it's a good thing or a bad thing.
Right. I mean, I think you could debate all day about, like, the fact that we're more online. Is it bad? Is it good? It's like, well, it doesn't matter what we think, because we are.
Right.
We are online. So, like, and, like, unfortunately. Yeah,
guilt. How much guilt should I have?
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, why are we putting, like, why do we have to put this kind of morality kind of, like.
No, you're a scientist. What's the number of guilt I should have?
4.5.
Oh, I'm way higher. I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Well,
4.5 out of 3.
You know, I think about that also in terms of being online. Like, we have these systems, like these evolutionary systems in our brain that, like, we really love social support, right? We like getting the approval of others because, for, you know, evolutionary, like, wise, that was really good for survival, like being in group and having resources. Yeah. And then we now have online. We have at our fingertips, like, every comment anyone wanted to ever make about us, they can just post it.
And it's so good, and it's so cool, and it's the best.
And it's like, well, we have these brains, and now we have this. And, like, how are they going to interact with each other?
Interesting.
Not well.
Well, I wonder what happens when we become used to things like these assistive devices, whether it's a second thumb or, you know, some sort of enhanced vision or AR on our glasses or whatever it is. And then we become dependent on it. And then we have to try. Do we ever have to try to remove it? I guess. I don't know. Like, because the worry is always like, what happens if we try to live without this then?
Yeah.
Don't you think that in a certain sense we are already dependent on something like, I mean, this is a very banal example, but something like shoes.
Sure.
I can kick shoes anytime I want.
You think you could live without shoes?
Anytime I want. I'm not addicted to shoes.
And not be in constant pain.
Yeah.
I'm not addicted to shoes. You're addicted to shoes.
Like, if you had to go about your normal life without shoes. Yeah. If you had to like go to the store and I mean,
I can't go to the store. Setting aside I can't go to the store because of their policies.
I was just going to say, setting aside their service policy.
Right.
But like walking on the street and the things you would normally do on a normal day without shoes, I think you would be in agony.
Yeah,
that's fair. That's fair. And you're right. And we think of that as like not necessary, but just helpful.
Yes.
Right.
I mean, this is the whole thing. Everything. There's lots of things that aren't necessary, but they're helpful. Like, you know, a lot of people are anti-medicine because they're like, oh, you're, you know, your immune system can handle it. It's like, well, we have these things that kind of help your immune system along.
Yeah, so. It turns out that in history, we have seen that sometimes the immune system is not enough.
Yeah.
We've seen in history that sometimes the immune system does not work out the way you planned. Right. And then you die when you're not a posta.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it turns out you're not a posta die. But I don't know. I think there's such a glut of information that. So science is a feeling. And there is a glut of information sometimes that changes people's natural good feelings into bad feelings because they don't think enough about the feeling that is science. People hear things like, oh, we're becoming antibiotic immune. And so they go, well, I'm going to have to dip my baby in the fucking East River to make sure my baby is my baby has a super immune system. And that's not what the news is actually saying when we talk about things like that.
Yeah. And it's also because someone's selling a dip your baby in the East River treatment. And they're on the internet saying this is the only way. This
if you had to brand that, how would you brand it?
A dip for now means less dips later.
There you go.
There you go.
I hate dips later. I want fewer of those. Yeah.
That looks unpleasant. I should do it now while I can. So I don't have to do it many times later.
And this is like, why didn't I get a PhD in branding? Is what I'm.
You I don't know why have. They don't offer.
It sounds like you didn't need one.
You don't go to school for what's already up here. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I want them to release these plans. I want to add a second thumb.
Mm.
A third thumb. A third second thumb.
Yeah, I think I would wear this. I think I would try this thing out, man. If they released this as a product, I would buy one.
I don't know what I would do with it. I guess I would find out in the moment. But I can't.
Yeah, I think you would just do everything you normally do, but a little bit better and easier.
Okay.
You know?
Okay, I'll accept it.
High fives can be high sixes now.
Ooh, that's one better.
It's a whole world.
That's better. Yeah, you're right. I'll take two.
Until that thumb starts learning on its own. And then that thumb.
It is a robot.
It rebels. It rebels against its master.
Exactly.
It's the most useful finger. We can't have it rebel. Out of all the fingers. It's the most useful finger.
You know what I would call that movie? Disposable.
Okay, I like that.
Pretty good? No?
Like the idea in the movie, it can't control the whole body. It just controls the... So it's just pressing buttons. It's like, no, don't press that button.
Yeah, and it's all the dangerous buttons. It's all the most dangerous buttons. Garbage disposal. Trash compactor. Yeah. All the garbage things.
It was the thumb.
It's constantly indicating your approval to people that you don't wish to give your approval to.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. No. Oh, he gave me a thumbs up. No, I curse you, thumb.
Now I have to let this dangerous hitchhiker into my car.
I wasn't even hitchhiking. Why are you slowing down? I saw your thumb.
This is great. Shannon, thank you for helping us weigh in on this. It's a very important story, and we're glad that we had somebody here with your credentials.
Yeah, I don't know how much knowledge I gave from the credential standpoint, but I was glad I could give some knowledge based on the branding standpoint.
I mean,
yeah, much more useful, to be quite honest.
We thought this was going to be a semi-useful episode, and it turned out to be a very useful episode. If you'd like to discuss stuff like this with other concerned citizens, talk about what limbs you want to add. Remember, it's a family show. This family is gathered around the Philco together, listening to the show. But what you would do with...
I mean, we are a family, but we're not for families. That's what I would say.
You're anti-family?
Wow.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
I don't believe our show is for families, but it is a family.
Go on to the Discord and tell Jeff how horrible it is that he's anti-family. If you want to join the Discord, there's an easy way to do so. Jeff, tell them where they can direct all their complaints towards you.
Oh, by joining our Discord, the best way to complain about me or Anthony or anybody is to go to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. Give us at least $1 a month, and then you have access to our Discord where we get all the complaints. So if you want to just pop off and let us know a piece of your mind, first go to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. Really stick it to us by giving us some of your money, and then you'll have access to the cool Discord. It's just $1 a month to get to the Discord. If you want to give us more money and really make us understand how frustrated you are by our opinions, you can get even cooler perks by giving us higher tiered
money. The money comes in higher tiers. I don't know if you've noticed in your pocket. Some money is higher tier than the other money. And as that money goes up in tiers, we also give you more content. One of the things that you'll get this week, actually, is an entire bonus episode with Shannon O'Dell, where we are asking your questions about the brain that you put into the Discord in between complaints about us. It's very exciting.
So great.
So go ahead and head to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. We're going to give you one question for free. We're going to give you one freebie, baby.
Just to really tick you off and get you motivated to
post.
Yeah,
you're going
to
hate this question. It's the worst. this one comes from Big Jim in the Discord. Thank you, Big Jim. Big Jim wants to know why we so strongly associate smell with memories. It seems like we associate smell even more strongly with memories than our other senses.
Yeah. That's a great question. Something I should probably know. Well, let's just talk about smell for a second.
Oh, she's going to say it. She's going to say her catchphrase.
Don't go through my nose. You know, I wonder if it has to do. I know smell doesn't get like gated in the same way as our other sensory information. So like all our other sensory information, we take it in and it goes through this area of the brain called the thalamus, which is kind of like, you know, and then the thalamus sends it off to like cortical regions to like make sense of it.
Oh, this is what we talk about all the time, where it's like we're seeing everything that's around us all the time, but we only take in the thing that's most important to us at the moment, and the rest kind of gets thrown out.
Exactly. So the thalamus is part of that kind of like gatekeeping kind of apparatus. But the olfaction doesn't go through the thalamus. The olfaction goes kind of straight to the areas it needs to. And I think I do believe there is a lot of connections between our olfactory system and our hippocampus, which is the area of the brain that's responsible for memory. So I think that's part of the reason why. And, you know, I'm wondering, you know, what the kind of evolutionary kind of reason why that would be.
It seems interesting to me because it seems like smell, out of all of the senses, we might need it not the least, but it's not way up there. Like you would think,
right?
You would think like sight and sound, super important. Hook that directly to the brain. Take that all in. Smell, it's like, hey, buddy, you've got the fast track to the hippocampus.
Well, I'm going to challenge you on that. You want to know
Please
why?
Don't. It's my show and it's
okay.
Very rude.
Okay, I'll see myself out. I got the VCR. Let's take it in. Okay. The thing about smell is that we have a lot of, we can decipher so many different types of smells, even if we don't know it. Like the amount of compounds that like we actually decipher with smell, I think is estimated to be like in the trillions.
Wow, really?
Whereas like, okay, when you taste something, you got what, five tastes? But what's the...
Tastes like chicken. It always tastes like chicken.
It's umami.
Chicken.
Sweet. Sour. Chicken.
Yeah.
Two.
Sweet. Yeah. It's two chickens.
Second chicken.
A sweet, a sour, an umami, and two chickens.
Right? Because everything that we think of as flavor is actually smell.
Sweet, yeah. Savory, salty. Right.
Bitter.
Bitter. Umami.
Wait, savory is umami.
Once again, please don't challenge me.
Let me get the video. I got a video about the tongue.
No, so that's interesting. So we can.
I travel everywhere with a video about the tongue.
Yeah, that one specifically, people are constantly asking.
Like, I just, it's just part of my packet. I just travel with my tongue video.
You'd be surprised how often it all comes back to the tongue.
But this is fascinating. So we can take in more smell data without knowing what it is than we can. Wow.
There's a lot of data there. I mean, we have like a kind of.
We could smell an eldritch god, but we could not perceive it with our eyes.
A what?
A multi-tentacled shambling god from the center of the earth.
Yes.
To see it would drive us mad, but maybe we could smell it?
Yeah. There we go. What?
So it that would lead me to believe, though, that if we're getting a ton of data, that we would want it to go through the gatekeeping center of the brain, right? It feels like the more data, the more gatekeeping we need.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, one would think. I don't know. It must have been, there must be a reason for it that we want to link smell so tightly with memory. And maybe it's that we can get a lot of like, you know, survival data from smell. Yeah.
Well, there's definitely a lot of, you know, smell, of course, can be a big danger sign. It can be don't eat that, don't consume that, don't be in here. That thing is dead.
I smell a knife.
Now it's rising. Yeah. Now it's moving toward me, and it still smells wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
is it animated by an eldritch god? Perhaps it is. Am I slowly going insane? Smells like it is.
Yeah. I mean, that's fascinating. I wonder if there's something about the immediacy of it and just the amount of, so we can perceive a lot of different smells, but we don't often have to take in tons of smells, you know, not as much as the visual data we're taking in all the time or the auditory data we're taking. So maybe there is a reason why we need that to be more filtered.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Cause think about, there's so many, I'm thinking about, there's just so many smells that we're smelling.
Yeah. There's like chicken,
sweet, sour.
What the Rock is cooking.
Which is usually chicken.
But, you know, with mice, I know, because like when you're doing mouse experiments and you're like trying to do like an experiment where the mouse should be able to decipher two different things, they get like small changes in chemical compounds because mice have this like giant olfactory bulb.
They never shut up about it.
They're constantly, they're like, oh, I smell the difference. a little different today.
Because my old size
of my olfactory bulb, my work. You know, I don't want to brag.
So that's interesting. So it's a more subtle sense then.
Yeah, I mean, because it's like what I think it's like a thousand or a trillion different receptors to get like little different compounds, right? But then smells are like a mixture of different. All those different compounds.
Wow.
I mean, I'm no smell scientist, but
should have gotten your PhD in smell science. That's where they're hiring.
But I said, don't put it in my nose.
Yeah.
Hey.
It's branding,
exactly.
Baby.
I had to stay true to brand.
Thank you, Big Jim, for the question.
Did you have to write a doctoral thesis?
I did.
Or did you pay your way out of it?
I didn't. Other people did, but they were like, you don't have to. My thesis was about memory, but it was like on a very molecular level. So it was about epigenetics. So I don't know if we talk a lot about epigenetics here. So the idea that you have DNA, but like your DNA in every cell is the same. So how DNA gets read is through like these epigenetic marks, which turns things on, turns things off. And so it was kind of looking at an area of the brain known as
what the government puts in the vaccines to change our DNA.
I legally can't talk about that.
I thought maybe we hit something where Shannon was like, you know what? I shouldn't joke about that. That's actually not a thing we're going to joke about. And then, hey, because actually, get vaccinated.
Please get vaccinated.
Please just get vaccinated. And I know I don't need to tell any of our audience this. So memory and epigenetics.
So basically what my project was looking at was like, so in different cells might have different even though they're like all the same cells, so all the same types of cells have mostly the same epigenetic marks, but they might be slightly different. And I was looking at this area of the brain called the hippocampus, which is the area where memory is, you know, formed and stored. And I was looking at, so randomly when we're forming memories, just random kind of bunches of neurons get excited, and then they're kind of like, that memory is that. It's called sparse coding. So like you have tons of neurons and only it's sparsely encoded. These memories just randomly different groups get taken at different times. So I was looking at, could we predict what neurons are going to kind of get pulled out at any one time based on their epigenetics? Kind of like, what is the reason why we get different groups at different times? And
is there like a dispatching system for memory?
Exactly. It's basically like, can I like read the epigenetics of these cells and kind of say like, these guys are ready to go and these guys are not going to be part of the memory trace.
Wow. That's fascinating. What did you
find? Interesting.
I found that like, there might be some kind of random stochastic kind of switching that happens epigenetically within these groups of cells, so that at any one time, some groups of cells are a little bit more excitable and therefore are more likely to be involved in the memory trace at that time versus later on, you know, 2 weeks later, those switches kind of, you know, are randomly turn off and maybe randomly turn on in another cell. And those cells are.
So you're saying that like what we remember sometimes is just a fluke of our epigenetics, like what happened to be primed and ready to be imprinted at any given moment might be what we remember rather than some other factor.
No, not exactly saying that. What I'm saying is which cells, because it's going to be like it almost seems like random which cells are become the memory trace at any one given time. We know a couple of things. We know like cells that are more excitable or in like a more excitable state are more likely to be part of the physical memory trace, right? This is called the engram, which is like the physical like memory trace in the brain. You like delete those cells and the memory's gone, kind of.
And you can if you get a rare engram, but you don't need it, you can crush it into dust and then you can use it to buy new armor. Are you following?
Yeah.
but all of these clusters of neurons will respond in the same way. They don't editorialize, but it's a matter of which ones are ready at any given time.
Exactly. And the idea is like it seems like there's different groups of cells that are ready at different times so that we can have this brain that can store so much memory, because randomly only, you know, this bunch of cells part of this memory. And then like later on this bunch of cells, it can be for this memory thing called sparse coding, which kind of allows for a lot of data storage. And so the idea is like the same cells can't always be ready for the memory, or you're going to have like a little bit too much overlap. So how is there like, you know, this dynamic switching in the cell that allows for different cells to have their turn to shine?
Oh, we talked a little bit about something like this, Jeff, where one memory is distributed just in case of failure. It's a fail safe, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like all your important memories aren't in this piece because this is the important memory zone.
Right.
Because then if somebody tries to get you to remember your anniversary and they push you over and they don't get the pillow underneath you in time, and you hit your head, right. you lose all your important memories except for the date of your anniversary.
Right. Right. But of course, you signed the waiver.
You signed the waiver.
So you knew the risks. You know, it was part of the contract.
So that's cool. So we know that there was an idea that it was kind of like a defense mechanism, right? Because it's like, I'm going to put all of this knowledge everywhere so you can't get conked in the head real good and lose all your knowledge. But could it also be like, the first thing that popped into my head, you know how like one nostril rests? Are there neurons that get tired? And so...
Oh, interesting. Yeah, well, you know, the what we do know about it, since they have these kind of things, characteristics that allow them maybe to be more likely involved in the engram, one is excitability. And because only at a given time, only a certain amount of cells are maybe in their most excitable state, what that means temporally is memories that happen somewhat close in time are somewhat linked. Which may be, you know, evolutionarily important. It's, you know, how many times that you like think about like a trip that you took and you also kind of remember all the other things that happened during that trip, right? We like temporally link things in time. That might be a reason for it too.
That's so wild.
Yeah.
That's so wild. That's why, man, you associate like, it's crazy. It's crazy. What simple machines we really are. Because that's why if somebody's around on like a really good day of your life, you're like, oh, I really like that person. I don't know why. I just really like that person. Oh, it's the same day you won $10,000. Right. Yeah. They had nothing to do with that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then it's also like what I'm always just amazed with. It's just like, okay, so I studied this question. Yeah, like here are the results I had and like, hopefully this is something meaningful. Basically, you just kind of give it to the science community. You write it up and you say like, here's what we found. And like, here's what we think is going on. But like, you guys take this and you run with it. See if you see, you know, a similar thing. And it's like, we don't know shit.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I did my part and I will see you later.
Exactly.
When you do your part, we'll meet back here. And
because it's like ultimately it's like, hey, maybe this is the thing that's happening. But that, I mean, that's just science and that's the beauty of it. It's a feeling.
It's a feeling, baby.
It's a feeling. You know what I've learned today, Anthony?
What?
It's that Dr. Shannon should be hosting the show instead of us. That's what I learned.
Oh, 100%. 100%. But listen, there are multiple reasons we have a no scientist policy on this show. Number one is because science is a feeling. And number two is because every time they just fucking hand our asses to us. Both asses handed to us. All three cheeks.
Asses. Yeah.
And we realize that we are vastly unqualified to do what we're doing right
now. Buddy, if I was qualified to do anything, I'd have a job. You know what I'm saying? Wink.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what? I think to be a scientist is just to ask questions. And you both are asking questions, so you're both scientists.
So we're now PhDs.
Yes.
You know what? We're doing better than scientists. We're providing answers.
Yeah.
They're mostly wrong. But at least they're answers.
Yeah, at least we're not like, the more data needed.
Those nerds. Scientists are always like, we need more data.
We need more data.
They're all like, we don't know. And I'm like, but why though? But is it a butt if it's just the crack? And they're like, we don't know.
We don't know.
And I'm like, science, come on.
Well, we appreciate, even though you refuse to answer any questions, we appreciate you coming by. If people want to hear and see more of you, you're doing all kinds of stuff. Tell us about it.
Sure. You can, if you like podcasts, cause you're listening to one now.
Correlation is not causation. Yeah.
So don't even try to pretend like you don't.
You can listen to the podcast Fun City. It is a, you know, and you can see, you can hear, cause you're not seeing, cause it's probably Anthony Carboni playing a character on Fun City for two episodes.
Love Fun City.
It's a Shadowrun tabletop role-playing podcast. I also host The Science of Self-Care. It's a science podcast where we dig into a different self-care practice. And I tell you, what the research says about it.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I bet it's mostly garbage.
You know, I try to, you know, I'm very, with the podcast, I'm like, you know, we don't know. But,
right. Because you want to, because you want to start a store where you sell.
Exactly. Because I'm selling. And at the end of every episode, I sell it.
And then where are you on the socials and things?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Shodell, Shodell. Or if you're on TikTok, okay, I am on TikTok at Shannon.PhD.
She's a cool scientist. Mm-hmm. She's on TikTok.
That is cool.
And remember, if you are a patron, we're gonna ask another couple questions to Shannon. You will get that audio in your inbox if you're at the $3 level or above. So be sure to listen there.
A bargain.
It's a bargain. That's just one level up from complaining about our bullshit.
Yes.
And remember, you can find us everywhere online. I'm at A Carboni.
I'm at Jeff Cannata.
We'll see you later. We'll see you later, baby. That's my sign off. I'm not good at branding like Shannon is.
Nice.
Stick it in your nose,
everybody.
She could host the show. We'd be so much more popular because we'd be branding better. Oh.